Welcome to the Produce Industry Podcast, your weekly download on current events, trends, market reports, and community discussions. Join us each week from Tampa, Florida, as we cover all aspects of the produce supply chain industry. Ladies and gentlemen, here's your host, Patrick Kelly.
Hey, produce people, welcome back to the Produce Industry Podcast. I'm your host, Patrick Kelly, also known as Little Citrus. Always great to be back, coming to you live from Tampa, Florida. Today is February 5th, 2024. That's right, the first Monday in February, everyone. How was your January? I just got back from Podfest a couple weeks ago, then the Piggly Wiggly Showcase, and we are counting down the days to SEPC right here in Tampa, Florida. Now, we're going to be here the 8th through the 10th over the weekend. Yeah, listen, Southern Exposure is one of the greatest shows, I tell you right now. And also, we've got the in-person networking event, so no virtual networking hour for March, everyone. I hope you joined last week for the first virtual networking hour. The next one is February 29th. Please be sure to register, reach out to us as we are going to talk about the Farm Bill. We're going to get some conversation going about, you know, why should you be involved or should you not be involved? But we got a subject matter expert coming across to talk about the Farm Bill this very month. And let's not forget our Juicy Crunch tangerines, everyone. I was juicing all the way to Alabama and back with these babies. Now, the fresh is pretty much all dried up, but the juicing program is still going, and you will still see that nuclear orange tangerine juice in your local stores. Now, everyone, for our featured guest today, Allie Cox of Noble West, fifth generation farmer. We're going to talk about very successful regional-owned businesses on how they can manifest an approach to building the right data for their organization. We're also going to learn from Allie on what's next in her Noble West agency and about her organization. So let's go ahead and get this episode started. Hey, Allie, welcome to the show today.
Hey, Patrick.
Great to have you. Listen, I always say like the power of social media, LinkedIn, because your group reached out to me. We found each other through the internet. And some people always say like, I don't mess with that social media stuff or LinkedIn. Does that even really work? Well, listen, it connects people so much if you're using it the right way. Seriously, am I right?
That's a fact. And I think especially there's, you know, we're going to dive into it, but there's a lot of sort of questions if we're just an ag industry or a food industry and we're kind of like only a relationship industry, but I think we're proving them wrong right now.
I agree. I tell everybody, I said, you know, if you use social media the right way, you'll get great connections, you'll build relationships. And as you being a fifth generation, you know, in the farming industry, me being third generation, relationships are key. We do know that. I mean, I can tell you, Allie, that some of my first customers when I started my business in 2009 was actually some of the people that I met through my dad when he would bring them over my house for dinner and just for networking, right? So even that, right, you know, years later coming into relationships, but again, it's a different world we're living in. And that speaks to Noble West and what you're doing and what you've created behind the scenes, okay? So your company has been around since 2007, but listen, don't let me steal the light here. I definitely wanted you to give our listeners that, you know, like a 30,000 foot overview of Noble West and the organization as you are in the produce industry and very involved, I would say.
Yeah. Well, let's also just say born and raised into the produce industry. So
you mentioned Turlock to me earlier.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Here we go.
No, definitely. Learning how to slice melons is a skill that you learn at a very young age with a very sharp knife when you are from the produce industry like I am. For sure. Yeah. Noble West, obviously we're a marketing agency. We work exclusively in the food, in the ag industry, really kind of focused on what's next in food. My team and I bring our decades of experience in entertainment marketing and consumer marketing and consumer insights to a really, really, let's just say it, old industry. It's an original industry.
Agreed.
It's one of the original industries. So really proud to be able to kind of lean into my roots and my history and ancestry, quite frankly, about we've always been farmers forever. And so really just have a lot of pride in the history and the hard work that it took to get us here. But I'm very, very focused on what's next. And every single farmer probably listening or grower, packer, shipper listening here is going like, yeah, we know operational costs are up 40% on the farm, labor skyrocketing, all the rest of it. And I have a pretty positive and optimistic view on the future, but I think that's because we're pretty close to the consumers. So we actually see kind of the interest from consumers. So it's all about telling the story in a different way that really resonates with consumers. And my whole goal truly is, I don't think we're in the agriculture industry. I think we're in the food industry, and part of the food industry is the growing and the supply chain, which is ag. So we take probably a more provocative and aggressive approach to agriculture marketing than maybe some of our competitors. And that's by design. That's because I need to make sure that my family farm has a place in a market years from now, and my kids can continue the legacy. But really, I also want to see a bigger ROI for farmers, because I know exactly how hard it is to farm. But then also, as a consumer who's lived around the world, I also know that, quite frankly, people have no idea how their food gets to them. And even the smartest people have no idea what the underbelly of the food supply chain looks like. There's just a big ocean between what consumers know about farming and what farmers know about consumers. And quite frankly, that is probably the passion and what drives me on a day-to-day basis here at the agency.
I love it, because as I'm, three generations, and my grandmother worked at the retail sector, and my dad actually worked at the retail sector as well before moving into a different direction. And I agree with you. One of the biggest things, in our food industry, I think you're right, it's not just ag, it is food, is, knowing where your food comes from. And even my wife said that to me the other day. She's like, where is this coming from now? Because, before, it had to be labeled. It had to say product of Chile, product of South Africa. Right. When Obama was president, they put intact that labeling.
Let's get political.
Right? It did. They had the labeling act where you had to label where your produce came from. Mm-hmm. People still do it, but it's not as big as it was before. It is a big issue today with knowing it. And if you, again, the smartest person in the world, right? Mm-hmm. And we know one of them, which is Bill Gates, who is buying up tons of agricultural land. I guarantee if you were to ask him 2 decades ago, during summertime, where does your citrus come from? He would probably have the wrong answer. There's definitely a misconception. And I think with a lot of imports happening today, they don't realize it. I mean, even like a fun fact, asparagus, most people don't realize that a lot of asparagus is imported. A lot of it is, right? And even...
Patrick, just to jump in there for a second. Asparagus, I think on the acreage report, I think it's like less than 2,000 acres of asparagus are grown in California.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is a wild... And I know Turlock fruit does grow asparagus, but that is a wild... And it's a perennial crop. It's somewhat sustainable. You can have several harvests off the same bush. And that, it's really sad. And I don't think it's because the palate for asparagus has gone down, right? It's really just because access, and I don't know, we could get super confrontational right now, but let's talk about the brokers.
Yeah.
Who's controlling the asparagus market? It's the brokers.
And the land, even the land, right? Think about that. I mean, that's a rotation crop. I mean, mm-hmm. If you grow asparagus one season, you could possibly put onions or something else on it the next mm-hmm. season, depending on that ROI. On mm-hmm. the asparagus. I mean, a buddy of mine, Shay Myers, does asparagus out of Idaho. Mm-hmm. And there was one year that he couldn't get the H-2A workers up to the States from Mexico. He mm-hmm. pretty much had to do a U-pick and let just consumers come in and mm-hmm. pick it, because he couldn't get the workers, the farm mm-hmm. workers in that program to pick that product, to get it to the packing house, to then market it to retail. Well, guess what? Do you think he's growing asparagus on that same land?
I don't think so. Oh, I would love to know what the ROI is on that you pick.
He told me it wasn't that great.
And I think
some backlash, because then food safety came in and he allowed all these people to come in and pick it. But he said, if I didn't pick it, where would it have gone? All that food would have gone to waste. It just would have gone to waste. Or you're going to love this one. Or I remember in 2009, I was in Fresno, California. We were getting ready to import pineapples from Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. And we were on a little show called KMPH. It's Fox's sister news station. Mm-hmm. And I remember the host literally saying to me, Patrick, I remember going to Tahiti for the first time. And they said, we're going to go to a pineapple grove. And I started looking for the trees on where the pineapples get picked from. That right there, I was like, wait, what? You thought pineapples grow on trees?
Yeah.
He didn't even realize that pineapples weren't grown in the United States.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right.
I mean,
right.
That's not crazy. I mean, listen, we could go on for this for hours, right? On where your food comes from. But I want to.
Well, we haven't even talked about technology either.
No.
That's a whole overlay part of that conversation. And that is where I think, like, if we don't adopt more technology in this industry, we know it's a relationship business. We know everybody's got their pet brokers. We know that everybody has their favorite buyers. It's a direct. And again, I feel like sometimes I just am super, I come onto these podcasts and I'm like, not too afraid to say, like, call a truth the truth. But like, if technology is not more widely adopted, and there are the startups that are out there like iFoods and whatnot, if they are not more widely adopted, then we are just cutting, like, there's so many different reasons why that's just so wrong. Number one for consumers, number one for profitability. And also, I think this next generation of decision leaders, particularly in produce, it's going to be amazing. And I'm so excited to be around for it, because it will be probably less about who our grandfathers and fathers like had their did business with. Obviously, relationships matter. Don't ever, like, I will never say they don't. But I think there's going to be just a more pragmatic approach and adoption of technology because of it.
Well, and you know, I was sitting with a Vietnam vet a couple weekends ago, and you know, we were sitting there talking. He was talking about his, you know, his service time, and this gentleman, he was an old timer. He called himself an old timer. He's like, I'm an old timer. He goes, you know what I think about today though? I said, what? He goes, when I joined the Marines, he goes, it was a yes sir, you do what you're told mentality. He goes, I think that's the problem with today. He goes, no one asks why anymore. He goes, we just sometimes just do what we're told. And we get stuck in a rut with not asking why, or how is this done, or where does my food come from? We just go to the store, we pick it up, we purchase it. And that was interesting to me. My wife and I looked at each other. We never thought that we would hear that, you know, from that generation. And me, I've been asking why my whole life. I've gotten in trouble so much for asking why. It's like, no, do as I say. And I'm like, why?
So many questions.
Why are we doing it this way? How come it's shipped? Boom, boom, boom. But let's talk about, you know, what really intrigued me when we were talking is, you know, the strategies for retail marketing. And, you know, one thing that really caught me was, is that retailers are being asked to create content. I've seen it through some of the retailers that I deal with. But, you know, they're not able to do this at this level, or they have no idea what to produce. And I know that your organization helps in that. And I want our listeners to learn more about that.
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, I think that many of our clients, most of whom are grower packer shippers in a variety of commodities, but especially in produce, they're sales guys, typically some of the more, how do I say, cagey birds that we work with, right? Produce sales guys. And they're saying, hey, no, I've got my relationship. I've got my person at Wegmans and Meijer and Kroger and Publix and Piggly Wiggly and, you know, all of it. But then we say, that's amazing. How about a few more carrots to kind of dangle your deal? And they're like, they just care about price. And I say, I'm not saying they don't care about price and also availability. And I get the whole song and dance that comes with that sort of produce perishable industry. However, if you do have what I'll kind of call a carrot, is those retail packaging. So again, consumers rely on their retailers for a lot of sort of their more, their choice, what they're going to buy and whatnot, particularly in perishable, because there's so many risks that are associated with that kind of food. However, the consumer's different. Retailers know it. Now, you know, for the first time in the last 5 years now, they all have social media teams. They all have content generation teams. The marketing manager isn't just concerned with like selling space in the weekly, and they're not just concerned with point of sale. They're concerned of what's happening digitally and what is happening in the part of that story. And that is a place where we can really, really support our clients, because they will get free content, call it a retail toolkit or whatnot, where you have packaged up descriptions, you have farmer bios, you've got great photography, you have raw cut video, you've got all sorts of information that they can just go and put on their website. They can put in their iPads that are point of sale. They can even utilize in their local commercials, social, all the rest of it. We just sort of serve it up on a silver platter. Don't make them ask for it, and don't make them for sure ask for ESG information that could help them, right? Like, let's package all of your sustainability that you're like, that you're already doing on your own farm, and also your contract growers. Let's package it up and let's give them something really shiny. And that's a place where our clients just do not think like that. They don't have that expertise in a place where we've been able to really come in and say, let's get this dialed in. We also, part of that can be if you're rolling something out or a season opener or a closer or whatnot, that's where we can do social media campaigns and whatnot. But it's all ROI driven and it's all data driven. I mean, Patrick, you know this, you're in the digital space. So how we analyze that information to share how that works is my favorite thing, because unlike radio, unlike weeklies, unlike, I can give you real impressions that are really, really focused and is information that can be laddered back to the salespeople and to the owners. So like we can kind of prove our value, if you know what I mean. But it's really, really doing that in a detailed approach.
I agree. And even with myself, you know, being involved in the grower packer world, we do have some of those retails that reach out. Heck, I'm going to be traveling up to the panhandle of Florida here pretty soon. Mm-hmm. And even to Alabama to go work with some of these retailers. But, you know, they're asking, you know, hey, we've got this social media page and we feature growers on this page. And now we're working on a collaboration to bring it all around. And then obviously that brings into you can start geo-targeting, right? Mm-hmm. And the zip codes. And then we can start bringing. So if all of a sudden you mentioned Piggly Wiggly, if all of a sudden they're driving, you know, through and we've got a grower, a video or a grower ad, boom, it's going to show up a Piggly Wiggly or something's going to show up in their Instagram to where they're now going to drive sales to them instead of it, ready? You know, sending out all that paper, right? What we used to do, you know, sending out those weekend ads that, you know, I'll be real, that we really throw away nowadays. Crazy as it sounds, I can't tell you the last time that my wife or I looked at the paper and was like, oh, yeah, we got to cut this coupon. No, we get a lot of that digitally now. So
I think it's because you and your wife are savvy and you understand, you know what, if I'm being marketed something that I care about, the internet's going to be able to find me.
It should.
Because you've already purchased it on Instacart. You've already purchased it on their online portal. You've already had it delivered to your house. You've already Googled it. You've, you know, it's going to, they're going to find you. And that's why digital advertising works.
Yeah, it's so true. And I'm going to give you one more little nugget before we go to break. And we'll talk about it when we get back. I actually had a call just a few weeks ago that a gentleman reached out for his 98-year-old mother that found one of our sponsors through our website, because the way I market our produce industry website, she found the sponsorship page and then found their citrus literally in Vero Beach. And this gentleman said, he goes, my mother's 98 years old. She got on the internet. She looked it up. She looked up the store and went and got the product. 98 years old. So
heck yeah,
she's that savvy. So
I
can
wanna
you.
I want to know her.
Oh, trust me. I want to know Janet as well. So listen, everyone, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
JGLC, the place to be, a third-generation, family-owned and operated asset-based company. Throughout their 60 years in business, integrity, reliability, and loyalty to their customers has remained their top priority. JGLC guarantees 24/7 communication with your personal logistics coordinator. They offer competitive pricing without sacrificing services. They operate throughout the United States and Canada. JGLC's customers count on them for dependability and dedication carried out on every order, every time. 60 years of service for all your trucking needs. Visit them at jglc.com for your custom quote.
Welcome back to the Produce Industry Podcast, everyone. It's always great to hear from dynamite sponsors creating dynamite content for the produce and supply chain industry. Today, we are talking with Allie Cox about Noble West, changing the game in digital transformation, helping retailers with marketing, and having all things fun. Now, fun fact about Allie here, and I know, try not to laugh yourself there, Allie, but fun fact, you know, she ran the Dachshund Manifest for Turlock Melons. And I'm telling you, this woman is literally in farming, everyone. So don't just think she is just a marketer. She knows it all from seed to plate. So Allie, great to have you.
Thanks, Patrick. And you know what? I utilize that information for the, I just squeeze it for the all the juice, because I think that's part of the reason why our clients appreciate working with us, is because they know that I care deeply about the farming industry. Heck, I a farmer myself. We have our own farm credit loans, right? And so that's where I think that we kind of get a little bit of extra trust. And honestly, credibility when we go in with sort of more robust strategies and recommendations that aren't the norm. And just, I think that that's where there's a little bit of trust. So thanks for bringing that up.
For sure.
Those are long days, but they were awesome.
I remember the long summer days. In my world, you know, my dad was in citrus. So we worked at Citrus Packing Houses. And I remember finally going to work at the Citrus Packing House. Yeah. And I remember my dad, I was the logistics manager. And my dad had me as like a manager in training. So I would have to go sit with all the different departments all the time. And I remember my dad would always say, like, are you done with, you know, scheduling all the trucks today? I would say, yes. He goes, then take out the trash, right? Then you know, do this. And finally, I remember one summer, there's just only so many times you can take out the trash before the nighttime maids start leaving notes on your desk saying, stop doing my job, right? Because, you know, that's what they get paid for. And I remember I told my dad, I said, can I go get my forklift driver's license? And he's like, sure. He goes, that'd be great. Yeah. You know, because in my head, I was like, I got to be of more value besides just, you know, being a logistics manager or scheduling loads. So I got my forklift driver's license. I then in turn helped on the grade table. I was a grade manager. There was all different things that I did within the packing house to where my dad was like, if you are one of the temp employees, you'll get laid off for the summer. And you probably remember that there were temp employees that got laid off for the summer. Mm-hmm. My dad said, just because you're not a temp employee doesn't mean I can't lay you off for the summer. Thanks, Dad. I appreciate that. So I always created enough value to say, hey, we'll help pack fruit. I'll go help get on the forklifts. I'll do anything to help the farm out and get an ROI back to the farm. I mean, that's what it is. And I remember those hot Central Valley summer days that I can truly tell you, like I live in Florida and people are like, oh, it's hotter in Florida. Listen, there's nothing hotter than 117 degrees of dry in the Central Valley.
Yeah, I think that where I really earned my stripes was, I think I was a manifestor in high school. Before that, it was pushing melons in the bin and secondhand melons and stickering. But I think it was when a small load had been sold to a local grocery store and I had to break down that pallet myself and put like 10 different varieties of melons on one pallet. And that's when they're like, okay, you know what? We actually want to keep her. And then they figured out kind of how athletic I was and how quick I could move. And they're like, yes, yes, and yes. So that's a good story. I also wrote my college entrance exam based on a very expensive casualty that I had on the shipping dock selling. Sent a load of fours to Japan when they normally buy nines and 12s because their grocery stores are so small and more urban buyers. So that was a very expensive mistake that I learned a good lesson on.
Hey, it happens, right? Yep. I mean, I always say, like, when you're getting to the place where you want to be, and I've been teaching my son this because... Yeah. My son is 12 and he keeps thinking of like, Dad, what do I want to do when I get older? And I said, listen, I talk to him just like this. I'm like, dude, listen to me. I go, you're going to do many jobs before you figure out the one that you love. 100%. I said, and you know that Dad has been involved with Grandpa. I go, you know where your great grandmother was. I said, and I can tell you right now, I said, I used to pick oranges for Grandpa and he'd go, what? And I go, yeah. And I learned really fast on what I didn't want to do in life. I said, and as we go through these jobs, I said, we start to realize what we want to do and what we don't want to do. I go, and that is perfectly okay. I said, and with the proper training, the right education, not school, education in life and schooling, I said, you'll be able to choose what you want to do that makes you happy. And my son really, really does. He looks at that and I feel my son is really smart because he talks to me about college already, where he wants to visit. He told me the other day, Dad, I want to go to Alaska and learn the history of Alaska. Last summer, we went to Dallas and we learned all about JFK. He's kind of a history buff, okay?
Well, I hope he listens to this podcast because your episodes on the history of Hawaii have been fascinating. And I'm loving the series. So I hope that he is listening to that.
He listens a lot. And my wife's like, don't push him into working with you. And I was like, no, I don't. Because my dad always was like, you know, trying to not push us into working. Yeah. But he was like, when you're ready, you'll come work for us. I told my son, I go... I told my son, I go, please go get a job at Dairy Queen so I can get discounts on Blizzards while you're 16. I go, that'd be fantastic for me.
That's a great franchise zone.
I'm just saying.
No, so, I worked with one of my first clients in food were Dairy Queen franchise owners in South Texas. And I learned a hell of a lot. I will tell you that. Quality, timeliness, consumer insights, managing people. That was a great early gig for me.
Hey, mine was Walgreens, just so you know. I worked at a bunch of retailers, but Walgreens for me really set the stage on customer service, how you speak, right? And I agree. I mean, some of these jobs really set the way for my next positions. And I remember one time someone was like, you worked at Walgreens? And they're like, wow, they have 3,000 stores. And I'm just sitting there as a 17-year-old, like, I just don't want to be in the field with picking oranges.
It's air conditioned in Walgreens.
I was like, I don't want to do this anymore. So yes, please hire me so I can make like $6.75 an hour.
Yeah.
You know, but yeah, I mean, it's amazing to see. I mean, we've talked about the generations, you know, before the break, and that's what it's about, right? So I hope one of my kids enters into farming or enters into something within the produce or food industry so we can keep that legacy alive. But if they don't, I know where their passion is and what they'll love. So I'm okay with it. But getting back, let's do this, because we talked about digital campaigns. We talked about social media. We talked about photography. We talked about working with the retailers, the growers in this aspect. One of the biggest things in today's world that is being pushed is data and analytics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, one thing that you said to me in some of our other conversations was, how much of it, though, right, is implemented by the decision-making processes or the actual decision makers? Because, don't get me started, data dump, right? It's like word vomiting, right? You can get all this data and it's all great information, but is it going to help your business, you know, as a retailer versus a grower? So talk to us about some of those data and analytics and, you know, how our listeners can really kind of navigate how they can determine an ROI on that, right?
Right. Well, I mean, I obviously want to approach this from a marketing perspective. That's my wheelhouse. But I think what I'll say is, you know, our clients typically are decision makers. They've probably been working in the industry for 50 years. They're making all the brand decisions for their grower, packer, shipper, like typically owner-operated business. Do they want a whole bunch of data? No. Do they like data that substantiates all of their feelings, thoughts, and opinions? Yes. So that is where, you know, we have Walk a Fine Line. All of our clients have dashboards with real-time information so they can see how their advertising campaigns are performing, their social campaigns are performing, their websites or blogs, all their stuff, their videos. That's all super important. It's all about understanding how someone is going to use the data and really understanding their business challenge, not their marketing challenge, but their business challenge. And that's where we really, really focus and really help them understand that, you know, if you're looking at creating new relationships, and also how do you use that data and share that with your retail partners? Because if you can come at it a little smarter, there's likely a deeper connection there and potentially a better client than customer because they can rely on you for more than just getting great fruit to them on time. So, you know, I'd really say understanding what the owner is looking to do with the data, understanding the business goals so that you plan accordingly if in particular markets, on different channels. Who are you looking to really reach with your either retail buyers, number one? Are you looking to reach retail buyers, which is a B2B play? Or do you really want people to have like usable customer service? I think one brand that is just knocking it out of the park as far as like kind of consumer education by utilizing data is Sumo Citrus. They're not a client of ours, but I definitely admire kind of how the approach they're taking. I really have been kind of watching how they approach it. But really, at this point, most companies have some sort of business analyst, right? Somebody is making sure that the shed is running efficiently. The whole thing has computers. Of course, the people run the computers, but who are the people that are analyzing it? So really, how can we bring that same approach to marketing as something that we do really on a monthly basis? Whenever our clients are savvy enough, quite frankly, to understand how data can be used more efficiently to have more of a targeted approach in advertising, we're here for it. But it's a journey. It's a journey, just like anything. We're educating the entire way. But if they have a dedicated marketing manager that they trust, it typically moves a lot quicker.
Yeah, for sure. I remember when the Sumos first started, I lived in the Central Valley. You know, it was packed by, you know, Century Packing and Shipping. Now, I believe it's AC Foods, that they're an investment banker that has now purchased that out. It's a lot different than what it was. Sumo knows that. I've got a buddy that works there as well. But they've done a good job in the way they market it. And I think that, you know, I always say this about this particular crop, because Sumo's only used to be out for 30 days. Like legitimately, like it was like 30 days, you know, come get it. If you missed it, you missed it. Well, now they're already out. It's January and they've got sumos in the stores, but I'm not going to lie, sumos, you can hate me if you want, but the quality has gone down now. You know, the marketing is on point, but I've had more people call me and like, what happened to sumos this year? Come in sour. And, you know, respectfully, I am a person of seasonality. I know some people are going to kill me for this, right? But I am such a person of experience and I long for some of these things. Just like, I know you're going to be like, what? Christmas. Like Christmas comes once a year, right? So when Christmas comes, I'm not listening to holiday music all year long, Allie, right? You got these new people that are keeping Christmas trees up all year long and they just change the
Christmas tree. Who are those people?
There's a lot of them. They change the Christmas tree based on
Are they all in Florida?
I hope not. Please don't judge us that bad. But they're everywhere. But they'll have a Valentine's Day Christmas tree or tree.
No, I'm not here for that.
And I long for the experience and bringing it back, which is why, too, I mean, you talk about the sumos. I always talk about the Noble Juicy Crunch Tangerines because
I'm here for it.
They are literally 40 years in the making, and they only are out for 60 days. That's it.
Okay, but I want to know everything about that tangerine. I do. But I do want to go back to sumo because I think that they're still marketing seasonality. They're marketing that 60-day season, and they're celebrating it. There's countdown clocks. And the other reason, because I think we've mentioned a couple, like I've said, I like the marketing. You said their marketing's on point. Let's talk about why. Okay, why? Because their brand is one brand with many touch points and many levers. So if you go and pick up a case that you're going to buy in a shop, you're going to have a very similar experience to receiving the newsletter, to receiving it on a billboard, to seeing it served up to you in digital. It's going to be a similar experience on social. And that's why their brand is so on point. Now, have they been a little too broad in their approach? I can't say that because if they've got the budget to do it, they can do it, right?
Yeah.
I wish more of our clients would be like, you know what? Here's a huge, big, fat budget. Go do what you think. I'm here for that. And then prove it out why it worked. That's a place where I think they've taken some big swings. And I really enjoy like kind of admiring their approach.
I do admire their marketing approach. I eat citrus year round. And I will tell you, I will not touch a sumo's tangerine until probably another month and a half. I won't even touch it in the store. I walk right past it. I'll stick with my Juicy Crunch tangerines, you know, through probably the mid-February. And then I start eyeballing it. I start looking at the fruit and I'm like, okay,
yeah.
Now I know when to buy it. Because again, I love the experience of it. But I agree, the marketing is on point. And again, it used to be for that 30 to 60 days. All right, now it's out for 4 to 5 months. But I agree, people still think it's only out for a limited time only. So
got it. Well, you're the expert on that for sure. I think they're also being playful in that marketing. And that's a place where, okay, now we're really getting to the meat of this. Why I think it's so great is because they are approaching their marketing as a consumer marketing project, unlike 95% of the ag world that has a box, they've got a B2B label, probably has their name worked into it somehow, and they are pushing that on consumers. That's not a consumer experience, right? That's where I would say Fowler's done a great job with Peel's. I think that obviously the Resnicks have done a great job with their brands, but really that's where understanding a consumer experience is how you do differentiate and how you drive kind of more consumer excitement around produce. And sure, does price matter? Yeah. But if you got really on point marketing, you are committed to helping retailers move that product off the shelf. I think that's a different story. And that's what we really want to help our clients with.
No, I'm totally with you. Totally with you on that. So as we start to wrap up, I mean, what's next for Noble West? Where do you see yourself in the next few years for the food industry? And, you know, what can we expect?
Oh, thanks for the question. What we can expect is to hear a lot more information about our clients and how we're telling their sustainability stories, how we're telling their growing stories, and how we're helping them reach consumers and their target buyers. This is my aspirant goal. I'm going to put it out into the world, is that retail partners are going to ask who their agency is because they get better information. Then they're going to understand that they have a partner on the sales side with consumers and also a partner who is committed to moving really amazing, biodiverse, highly nutritious and like products off the shelf. That's what I care about. And that farmers get a fair return for the work that they put in.
One of our sponsors in Equifruit, you know, I never thought about, you know, bananas in the way that they've brought light to the table. And one thing, you know, they always say is farmers got to get paid. And that's one thing that I stand behind. from A to Z. You know, listen, I realize they're a banana company and they're fighting, right, imports in other countries, right? There's a lot of things that happen outside of this country that we have no control over, but they have this goal, right, of fair trade. And I believe that every farmer has to be paid and they got to be paid fairly. And realistically, if you get more money for, you know, that item, then you should be going back to the farmer and figuring out how you can help that farmer put more into the ground, how they can help better procure their product, their soil, their water, all of the above. So I completely agree with you that we got to look out. You know, we call it the little guy, right? Which is the farmer nowadays, right? Because there's so many investment companies that are coming in because farmers sometimes just can't make it anymore being farmers and being themselves, right?
Well, they also have a different job. They have to worry about the word marketing in the produce industry. I mean, that's a whole podcast we should have on its own. Like, right? It's not just sales. It's actually consumer marketing. Your association's not going to do it. Your trade organization's not going to do it. If you have a co-op, they'll do it.
But even the co-op will say it's not in the budget. If they don't feel that it's deemed because of their ROI versus where they're selling the crop, they might not have the marketing budget. So they might just keep the same status quo until prices or more profit is coming in from their customer.
Yeah, fair enough. Well, lots to do in the industry, but I do want to make sure that grower packer shippers know that times are changing on the marketing side also, as much as they are on the farming side, which is, you know, now Agreed. Everybody has robots in their fields and whatnot. So obviously we got to take a different approach and we're here for it.
I agree with you. Well, Allie, it's been great having you on the show. And as we say, we'll see you in the fields and on the horizon.
You've been listening to the Produce Industry Podcast with Patrick Kelly. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes or Anchor to get new, fresh weekly episodes. For more, please follow us on Instagram and Facebook at the Produce Industry Podcast. Until next time, see you in the fields or on the horizon.